The sales robots have taken over, and they're decimating deals left and right, destroying them right in their tracks. On the AI for Sales podcast, our mission is to empower everyday sellers to embrace AI superpowers to build new bridges and crush quota. Dr. Joel Aban said it best in the AI for Sales book, "In sales, time kills deals. In AI for Sales, AI kills time." Join our hosts as we learn from the C-suite of the world's fastest growing companies about how you can leverage AI today to transform your sales revenue engine while being the best version of you.
Hey everybody, Chad Burmeister, and I'm your host of the AI for Sales podcast. And it's been a few weeks, so I'm very, very happy to be here today. And this conversation's really in line with everything that I think about when I think about AI for Sales. And so we're talking to the founder of a company called 5X. And that's, to me, is what being exponentially human is all about. It's when you can leverage technology to be 5X more effective, 10X more effective, 50X more effective. And it happens to be the growth trajectory that Tarush Agrawal is on, which is 5Xing his business. The company launched in its current iteration just 7 months ago. They're already at $1 million ARR, and they're going to 5X. We're going to dig into some of the strategies, tactics, how they help their customers, and those kinds of fun things. Before we do that, I'd like to get to know our speaker by asking a few questions. So, Tarush, welcome to the call.
Chad, thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to being here and adding some value to your listeners.
Well, I love, because we were talking offline before we clicked start, and I believe you live in Bali and you're visiting India right now. Tell our listeners a little bit about, I like to ask the question, kind of, what was your thing when you were younger? What was your passion? And we'll do a part B to that question. How'd you end up in Bali?
Yeah. So, you know, I sort of growing up pretty boring, but I knew pretty early on that I'm going to be in tech. My mom ran an e-commerce business, and I was introduced to tech pretty early on. So, you know, growing up, I sort of figured I would be doing I wouldn't have guessed I would ever live in Bali, but it would have sounded reasonable if I knew I was doing something around tech or data. And kind of part two to your question, how did I end up in Bali? It's actually a really interesting story. But you know, in my previous role, I was leading data for WeWork, and you know, sort of did that in New York out of HQ for some time. And you know, at one point, I was pretty burnt out and saturated and sort of done with, you know, sort of corporate America, and I decided to go quit, and I thought I would go write a book and go scuba diving for a year or something like that. And a friend of mine, a dear friend, convinced me to go with him to China. He was being sent to jumpstart the technology team in sort of China, which was a huge opportunity for us. And I think WeWork at that point was planning to open up hundreds, if not thousands, of offices in China. And so, you know, I had never been to China, and I've sort of signed up, and I sort of found myself there. And, you know, towards the end of the first year over there, WeWork's IPO started failing, and I decided to take a 10-day vacation to Bali, and, you know, did that. And as soon as I landed in Bali, that was day one of COVID, very, very quickly, you know, the sort of border shut, and I'm over there with my small handbag. And I spent 2 years over there, quit WeWork, and sort of started 5X, and Bali became home. And that's where I live now.
It's kind of amazing when you can align so perfectly to your environment, where you just kind of know, oh, this is where I'm meant to be. I've found that it took a while, right? I grew up in Colorado, and then I moved to Southern California, Northern Cal, totally different environments, Arizona, North Carolina. I've lived in New Zealand. I've been to China. I've been to India. I've been to Philippines. And then guess what? I ended up back in my home state of Colorado, because I realized as a kid growing up and going skiing and everything that this is where I want to be. So it's kind of fun. Go ahead. You're going to say more about that. I love it.
I was just going to say, like, you know, if I had no choice in that, right? Like it obviously worked out for the best, but to kind of think that I had any sort of say or planning in like eventually setting down in Bali was kind of meant to be. And when it came, it just was the most obvious thing, but it was a complete fluke.
Wow. And that's kind of how business feels to me, right? Where you kind of follow the calling in life, and then you are where you're meant to be at the end of the day. And if you're not, you know it, right? When you look in the mirror and you wake up in the morning and you go, "What am I doing?" And so you have to follow that inner voice that tells you where to go. So talk to me a little bit about AI. Obviously you've had work in data, and that's a big growing hot industry. You look at companies like ZoomInfo that started as Discover.org and bought RainKing and rolled up, all these big data players that are worth billions of dollars. How does artificial intelligence play in the world of data at 5X that you're playing in?
That's a great question. And to set kind of some context, right? Like 10 years ago when we were just getting started, I was working back at Salesforce then. I sort of got to be one of the first few data engineers over there. A lot of what we were focused on from the data side was the sort of playbooks hadn't quite been established, right? Like we wanted to analyze data across customers. The sort of modern data stack wasn't obviously at a point where it is today, right? And a lot of, it was a very exciting time to be to sort of be, to be getting into data because the playbooks hadn't been written and we could really kind of go establish what those playbooks were. As we think about 10 years later today, right? Like a lot of the core data engineering stuff has kind of been sort of figured out, right? Like how do you sort of collect data, ingest it, store it, model it, structure it, report it? It's sort of fairly well understood, right? And the modern data stack movement is sort of well on its way. I think, we're seeing in the AI data science world, what we saw 10 years ago inside the data engineering world, where a lot of those playbooks are now starting to be written. So, if you think of 5X, right, and kind of what we do a really good job in doing is kind of giving you the modern data stack, all the core stuff, all the way from data collection, ingestion, storage, modeling, reporting as a service, helping standardize a lot of that stuff so that you can ultimately focus on data science and AI. Because a lot of companies, might go hire data scientists, and I think you know this better than anyone else. And, when you hire these folks and you don't have the right ingestion frameworks and you don't have the right infrastructure there, they're spending most of their time cleaning data, they're spending the time modeling data and not actually building anything which is, what we consider data science or ML.
Yeah, well, I think of a unified communications as a service company that I worked for. And we had a chief data scientist out of Austin, Texas, and garbage in, garbage out. So we were relying on Philippines labor to export data into spreadsheets, massage the data. And when a board meeting was coming up on a quarterly basis, it was like, okay, all hands on deck. And that was tens of hundreds of hours that would go in with powered by people and humans. And so this chief data scientist who was trying to leverage the information to actually make strategic decisions for the company, like which accounts should we be spending our time on, which accounts should we even service, where does a salesperson get involved and from what country? There's so many questions that are asked, but if you have garbage in, there's just, what's the point? It all starts with good data.
I think I look at it a little bit like a construction site, right? Like, if you want to go design a skyscraper, AI in some ways is the penthouse at the top floor, right? It's, ultimately it provides a lot of value and it's showy and that's what people are really talking about. But you can't design your penthouse before digging up the earth and building a foundation and starting to, build phase one, phase two, phase three of the building, right? And in some ways, if you, look at Maslow's sort of pyramid of needs and, interface that in the data world, your data infrastructure, data collection, ingestion is really the sort of bottom of the pyramid. And kind of as you go up, you get into, reporting, A/B testing, experimentation, And then finally, the, you know, the very, very, very small top of that pyramid is, you know, insights and recommendations as a service.
Well, that reminds me of the tower in San Francisco that's right near Salesforce new building.
Yeah,
that's leaning done. And it moves, what, 1/8 of an inch a year or something. And I think, so I think it's 6 inches crooked now.
Yeah.
And they don't know how they're going to solve for it because it's built on not solid ground. So
yeah.
It's kind of a similar dilemma.
Yeah.
No, tell me about the stacks, because you talked about the 12 data layers. I'm not sure our audience has heard that. And you said there's companies that are focused that are worth billions of dollars for each of the 12 stacks. I don't even know how many people are aware of 12 data stacks. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, you know, again, kind of going back to the modern data stack movement, right? You know, we're building new categories in this space kind of very quickly, right? So your first kind of 3, 4, 5 layers of the stack are pretty well understood, right? You know, it starts off with sort of data collection. This is, you know, instrumenting your front end or sort of instrumenting your apps and being able to collect data, you know, sort of push it back. And this is more around engagement data. So, you know, typically, you know, you have your mixed panels or Heap Analytics or Google Analytics playing at your data collection layer. You know, on top of that, you have ingestion. You know, your average startup today has got 10 to 12 different sources of data. How do you take this data, put it into a central warehouse? Obviously, on top of that, you have sort of storage, data modeling, reporting, right? So kind of, you know, the first 5 layers of the stack are kind of pretty well understood. And at that point, you know, it's less kind of verticalized, but more sort of horizontal. But what are, you know, in terms of the other capabilities which the modern data stack can start to provide, you know, we get into sort of data lineage and data catalog, right? How do we ensure we have the right sort of metadata to be able to look at failures, to be able to look at, you know, to find trusted data sources? We have reverse ETL. How do you take this data and push it back into applications like CRM tools like Salesforce or like marketing? Or like marketing automation platforms for the business to start using. We have tools which are really good at decision making. So, you know, how do you take kind of what you have in your warehouse, be able to run sort of data science like studies on it to sort of power, you know, self-service decision making. And then obviously we have, you know, A/B testing platforms, we have AI ML layers. So, you know, I think we just kind of spoke about 10 or 12 sort of layers sort of right there. And, you know, data mesh is kind of extremely valuable. It is sort of getting really valuable, this sort of this concept of sort of other concepts. So, you know, on top of, you know, just those, you know, there are a few other areas which are getting kind of increasingly, you know, hot right now, areas like sort of data mesh. So, you know, the modern data stack keeps kind of growing, and you know, what's extremely interesting is that it's pretty fragmented, right? Like, you know, each of these layers today has a $1 billion player. So what this means that if a company is trying to get started, it's, you know, they have to go sign multiple enterprise contracts. And what, you know, WeWork and Salesforce and these companies, which, you know, I worked at, were able to do is deploy an army of engineers. We had 30 data platform engineers at WeWork just sort of stitching together the modern stack. For 90% of businesses, this is kind of not feasible, right? So what like 5x does is, you know, we take the modern data stack and stitch it together and provide it as a service. So as a business, you're kind of good to go on day one. You don't need to worry about signing enterprise contracts or figuring out how it all plays together. You can just go use the stack to focus on business outcome.
Can you share an example of a company that you partnered with? You don't have to share the name of the company, but, you know, what industry are they in? What was their business problem before, you know, when they came to you, and what was the solution?
Sure. You know, happy to kind of, you know, we have published a few case studies, so kind of happy to sort of talk about it. But, you know, the sort of smallest companies using 5X are, you know, we have an education tech platform called Encantos, which, you know, sort of started using as pre-product. And they sort of realized that, you know, when they did want to go live, they wanted to have the right data models in place, the right metrics in place for the marketing, product, sales team to kind of track to see how they're doing, right? So, you know, very, very early stage company, they sort of used us a lot around go-to-market strategy, where the customer's coming from, how much time are they spending on the website, what are the different segments of customers we have, what's our customer lifetime value. And if you look at, you know, some of our much larger customers, you know, we have a public company, we have one of Australia's largest sort of public liquor companies using us. And for a business like that, which has got, different sales channels across, a direct-to-consumer business, sort of retailers, other sort of distribution channels, what becomes very difficult is, as you kind of mentioned earlier, how do you automate a lot of the financial dashboards? Where are sales coming from? How do we kind of look at this per region, per city, per channel without having to again deploy an army of sort of financial analysts at the end of every month? So, use cases around improving internal efficiency and getting more visibility into sort of where customers are coming from. So kind of across the board, we have small customers which are looking to get started. Increasingly, a lot of customers are starting to do this, sort of faster and faster without waiting to, go become a Series B C company. And, obviously some of the bigger companies are also realizing that, we want to use data to focus on business value. We don't really care about owning the data platform. And, we are starting to see use cases across them as well.
Yeah, got it. Thinking about a service like yours, if AI didn't exist, would the company exist, or what would the service be without artificial intelligence?
So, kind of going back to kind of what I said earlier, right? Like AI is very much a very up and coming technology, which is currently today at its infancy. Now, what needs to happen in order for AI to become mainstream is that a lot of the core problems before AI need to be commoditized. What are some of those problems, right? A big part of that problem is the sort of is the infrastructure, the data, or the data platform required to get to a point where you have stable, clean, highly modeled data, right? Which is, again, the first sort of five layers. Are you at that point where your data sets are not changing every day, your core metrics in the business are not changing every day? Because if they are, there's no point sort of modeling and trying to, sort of build sort of recommendations on top of that, right? So, one of the things you're sort of going to require is, core data platform. And then the second is, also, how do you, it's not just kind of having a platform, right? But in sort of in like order to get value from something, you need both sort of product plus people. The sort of second kind of area which we focus on is because, we're starting to standardize the platform, we can, hire incredibly smart data engineers and then pre-train them on the platform. So what we can do is provide companies both the platform plus the people piece. And, I think what the next 5, 10 sort of years are going to be about is sort of how do you standardize a lot of the, core platform, a lot of the sort of model building, a lot of, the sort of experimentation layers, which will then allow, the core AI ML stuff to become mainstream. Because,
Sure.
the way we're sort of now is like, 10% of companies can go do this, and these are the 10% of companies that have, can deploy an army of engineers to go solve a lot of these problems in a way which the remaining 90% of companies can't do. So, these sort of 10% of companies kind of lead the way and, help define what is the path and what is the layer of like sort of standardization. But it particularly gets interesting, especially for a company like 5X, which is focused on the remaining 90% of companies. It gets more interesting for us as some of the playbooks of, which platform is going to win the sort of platform war, what's, the sort of best practice going to be on building feedback loops, on deploying models, on sort of measuring, sort of effectiveness, and looking for some of that to get more standardized before we take a sort of stance on the AI ML layer.
It reminds me of the concept of NFTs these days, because you got to do this, then you got to tie this wallet to that wallet. Then there's so many pieces of standing that up that, somebody came to me and said, "Oh yeah, it's $30,000. We'll help you set up your NFT mining business." Well, all that work really wouldn't be required. There's a lot of margin in there in $30,000 kind of an investment. To do something like that. And so, to your point, you've got to standardize the base. Otherwise, you have the 6-inch leaning tower like we have in San Francisco.
Exactly. Even now with like, it's kind of, I'm not super familiar, but platforms like OpenSea are starting to sort of, you know, become the sort of mainstream NFT sort of marketplaces, right? And you need to have that sort of level of like standardization before something can kind of really take off, because otherwise, you know, you're dealing with a bunch of different protocols and different systems which don't really talk to each other. And in that case, you know, it's kind of very hard to get to a sort of a certain tipping size, right? And, you know, if you look at some of the technologies, you know, before the data warehouse came, right, before Snowflake came, we had Hadoop and Spark. And then, you know, we also have sort of real-time systems like sort of Kafka. You know, I think with Snowflake becoming mainstream, what's become clear is that some of those platforms have now become niche, right? Like a few companies might go use Spark and you know, other technologies like Kafka, but for the most part, you know, the data warehouse is what's gone mainstream, right? And, you know, we kind of expect every company to have, you know, a data warehouse, whether it's Snowflake or BigQuery or sort of Redshift, but, you know, a version of this, you know, every company is likely going to have in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, got it. It's funny, the new one today, I always look at, not always, but Coinbase, I log into at least every couple of days. And yeah. So the one that was trending this morning is API 3.
Yeah.
It talks about APIs on the Ethereum token that powers the API 3, connecting traditional APIs with blockchain. So that was pretty interesting.
That sounds like, yeah, we'd love to look into that.
Where do you think AI... you know, AI and the sales motion, what do you see in that area today, and where do you think it's headed?
Yeah, you know, I think in general, right, like there's so much opportunity to, you know, especially in the sales side, to, you know, use data to automate the business. Like, you know, for instance, we're using a tool called calendar.ai. You know, we're a 7-month-old company. We just hired our first sales rep. So obviously very much at the infancy of things like this, you know, the typical, you know, outreach, cold outreach strategy, we sort of might have briefly tried it, but, you know, didn't sort of really work out, right? And, you know, was introduced to this product because a friend of mine is an investor in them. And what they're doing is they're using machine learning. They are able to identify who your target audience is, you know, find a company over there, and then understand a little bit of what that company does and use a very tailored message to kind of reach out to that company. And, you know, something like that is resulting in getting 10 to 15 qualified, you know, calls every week, which is, you know, the only one thing we've done inside outbound so far. And, you know, just by using, you know, having the right application of AI in the right product and, you know, making it easy for a company of our size to kind of go use, it's, you know, just kind of changed the game in terms of our sort of lead outreach and, you know, sort of being able to be introduced to new leads, right? So, you know, that's kind of one sort of nifty product we found sort of especially in the sales introduction sort of side. What we're starting to do a little bit more, you know, we're about to sign a much larger Indian company kind of, which has got a large sales force and, you know, sort of really looking at this layer called like decision making, right? Which is how do you use data science type AI type approaches to look at your existing data and come up with recommendations of, you know, here are a few things you kind of want to focus on, right? So a very classic example is, can you look at a revenue metric in your business and then, you know, ask AI to figure out, hey, if I need to improve this revenue metric, are there any particular cities or region or customer segments or, you know, any of that which are going to be sort of statistically extremely relevant towards, you know, increasing, you know, towards sort of maximizing this, right? And so, you know, we're starting to see use cases which sort of companies are focused on around like, who are our best sales reps for each particular type of segment? You know, how do we kind of, you know, start being able to, you know, match our best sales rep to the best, you know, to our best leads, kind of do it inside an algorithmic way instead of kind of being done randomly. And, you know, we're starting to get introduced to use cases like this. And, you know, again, we kind of focus a lot on some of the core engineering and the core modeling stuff. And to kind of see that, you know, the industry is already starting to think about problems like this is I think, going to be a really interesting time for, you know, the sales automation, sales AI space.
That's awesome. There's a technology you should check out. It's called Codebreaker Technologies. It's a plug-in to LinkedIn, kind of like Crystal Knows, which tells you about the personality of the person. But it's very simple. It tells you your bank code. Are you blueprint? Are you action? Are you knowledge? Are you nurture? And it stack ranks the person on the other side. So there's a certain kind of seller that would map to a certain kind of buyer.
Yeah.
And if you could just sort the data in that way and say, hey, I need a list instead of people that are in Austin, Texas. I need people. I'd rather give you a list across the entire nation of people that are a certain personality type and then match the right personality with the right personality.
Yeah.
And you know, you can see standard deviations 2, 3, 4 times better when you match the right personality, the right seller with the right buyer type.
That's super interesting. I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, it's neat. And they've got APIs, and you don't have to get an Ethereum token API to make it work.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. All right. Big question that I like to address is the last question on the show, and that is the impact on human labor, because there's always this concern, as there has probably been for 100, you know, for all of time. If I automate something, will it displace a lot of the people on my team and my company on my sales team? What can you talk about the elephant in the room that says, hey, when you deploy more technology, does it have a, you know, do you need fewer salespeople, or how does AI impact the need for sales professionals?
I mean, you know, just kind of looking at it from the 5X perspective, right? We're starting to automate a lot of the core data engineering and core sort of data platform needs of a company. What that's just going to result in is companies hire more data scientists to go focus on the higher levels of abstraction and high levels of value, right? And what starts happening there as the competition increases is that you need to have more people to keep up the same level of efficiency, because now the bar has just sort of gone up, right? So, you know, in general, you know, we had, you know, just kind of looking back, right, in the last kind of 15, 20 years where, you know, we had these thing called database administrators, and we had lots and lots of them. And we had, you know, folks writing, you know, assembly and sort of lower levels of programming who were not chip makers, right? And, you know, all of a sudden today, you know, those roles have kind of gone away, but have the number of people in technology increased or decreased? It's sort of gone up exponentially, right? So I think, you know, what starts to happen is, you know, we as human beings just build higher and higher layers of abstraction on top of the stack. And if you remove some of the, you know, earlier layers, you add them into layers on top of that, right? So, I think there's some industries as a whole which start to get more and more automated, and they might have, you know, they might have a lot of, you know, issues around, you know, loss of jobs in a particular sort of micro sort of vertical. But I think at the macro level, you know, if you look at the sort of global economy, I think, you know, AI and ML are just sort of creating more and more scope of, you know, of like broader applications, which are going to require sort of tons of research and, you know, sort of tons of new types of jobs being created.
Yeah, well put. In my world, sales development and business development reps have 10x'd over the last five to 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's similar to the database administrator, because that role does email, they pull data, they do a lot of kind of low value work. The high value work is when they're actually talking to somebody, using their voice, building trust. And so a lot of the automation can be done at the lower level work. And that's where I think, yeah, SDR, BDR, sure, that could be disrupted, right? You could have one person manage 10 virtual BDRs.
Yep.
But at the quota carrying sales level, you can now start to reallocate people into roles that are revenue generating and much less of the grunt work of the data work that's been required in the past. So same kind of thing.
I sort of
thought, well, amazing conversation, Tarush. This has been really, I appreciate you taking the time. You know, we talked to people from biotech to pharmaceuticals to, you know, quota carrying technology salespeople and all of the above. And the amount of commonalities across the discussion are very similar. So I hope our audience gets a lot out of today. And I really appreciate you taking the time here to share with us today.
Thanks so much, Chad, for having me on the show. I hope the audience got some value out of this, and looking forward to sort of continuing the conversation.
Absolutely. And if people want to get a hold of you, Tarush, what would be the best way to reach you?
You can, you know, sort of reach out to us on any of our social channels. You know, hello@5x.co is, you know, the easiest way to reach out, or just our website at 5x.co. That's C-O.
Excellent. Well, if you're looking to 5x, if you are looking to not invest in 12 different layers of enterprise data, and you want to go to one source to help you with your data challenges, 5x.co is the place to go. So Tarush Agarwal, thank you for joining. And thanks everybody for joining another AI for Sales podcast.
Hey, you made it this far in your AI for Sales journey. Want to augment your sales growth? First, leave us a review and then visit www.scalex.ai to claim your free strategy session today.